Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, mother! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm tomorrow. Ricky on the board, and even Ricky's not going to say beautiful Chicago on this rainy morning, but maybe it is beautiful behind the raindrops. What do you think?
I think it's really nice, honestly, man. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the rain, but the weather's not so bad. I mean, the temperature.
No, the temperature's not so bad, and you're going to New York this weekend?
I am, yeah. I'm very excited about it, man.
We'll have to give you a couple spots for you guys to go have a drink, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I hear it's a big deal to get up in the World Trade Center these days. You can't just go up there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm not completely sure about it, but I would imagine, you know.
Yeah, well, S&P Futures down 5, NASDAQ Futures up 4, so we're doing a little bit of a mixed bag after a pretty big sell-off yesterday, even though we did come back quite a bit on the close. As the news out of Washington continues to sweep over the market, shall we say. I don't know what that's a term. Do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you do. You know, it's... I do recall that... just before the new year, when, of course, Trump had won, but he wasn't yet president. His, you know, inauguration happens in January, right? I said, you know, I give this guy until the end of March, and I still do, but yesterday my we're screwed meter got pegged because Johnson, of course, all spending bills originate in the House, right? That's what the Constitution says. Johnson comes out and basically says we're not touching anything related to the current level of spending. We're punting that to October until the new fiscal. And so this makes all of the...
What's so special about October, just out of curiosity?
The fiscal year ends on September 30th.
Okay, all right. Fair enough.
I mean, you know.
So this year is this year.
So all this yelling and hollering with Doge and all this. By the way, the Impoundment Act stripped presidents of the ability to put the middle finger up against allocated funds. That happened after Nixon did it. He stuck the middle finger up.
Yeah, we're talking about somebody who didn't care about.
Well, he tried to control inflation that was raging by going at the source of it, which is more deficit spending. You know, you're spending more than you're taking in taxes, and you're printing the rest. And he took a crack at doing something about that by not spending the money.
He also did wage and price controls.
He did indeed, and it didn't work out very well, did it?
No.
And by the way, he also is the individual responsible for inexorably linking health insurance to your employment.
Hey, well, since you maybe inadvertently brought up the topic, you know what, let's talk about the wage and price controls. But somebody, Hal, actually sent something out a few days ago regarding entitlement programs. This is probably a Friday discussion. And Nixon was the first guy to come out with what they called the negative income tax, which essentially was a way to get rid of all the programs and just give people a check. And I know it didn't go very far, Carl, but you know, I remember doing a lot of study on that. It was, I'm not saying I agreed with it all the way, but it was really well done.
Well, there's a, well, except, the, okay, so there, yeah, there's been a lot of work that's been done on that. You know, there's a lot of theory, okay? The part of the problem that you have And you need only look at the state of political discourse and the way that consent's manufactured these days to see that theory and reality are frequently, I don't even know that I call them bedfellows.
No.
You know, I mean, that's, there's an awful lot of 20-watt energy consumers over at Brookings and, you know, and Cato and all these other places. Those would be Brains, by the way. Expend their 20 watts, and as it turns out, what they propound is just a load of dark, smelly stuff that comes out of the back end of the dog. And there seems to be a lack of recognition of historical context. Okay, but we have run some small experiments on this within the states in the last 5 or 10 years. There have been a few places that have done little pilot programs where they've, you know, where they basically said, okay, you know, here's $500 a month, do whatever the blank you want with them, right? No strings attached. Essentially, you know, universal basic income kind of things, right? At small scale.
Same thing as the negative income tax. Gets you the same place.
Yeah, exactly. Gets you the same place. And so we have some results at small scale. And universally, they do not actually work to help people. Universally, what ends up happening is that all it does is raise price levels because the money gets spent, but it doesn't get spent on things that actually improve people's lives. So it's, you know, obviously the money gets spent, right? So, I mean, you know, from that standpoint, it's a quote-unquote success. But when you look at it from any kind of objective standard, it's a failure. So I don't know. It's like so much of this stuff that people are just hive-minded on in so many different areas. They think it's the most unique thing ever. Okay, you know, this stuff.
Oh, it's not though. It's everything.
But it is, right. It is.
Everything is a reaction, seemingly to something else. And yeah, but we're talking about. Like, let me just set the historical context just a little bit.
Yeah.
We had obviously nobody got nothing from nobody until Roosevelt got in and said, "Look, if you live in this country, where you're at least, no matter how much of a bleep up you are, you're going to get fed, basically."
Right.
And, you know, in this country, nobody's going to starve to death. And nobody. So he conjured up Social Security and all this other stuff. And he had, you know, people working on the WPA and the citizens, whatever, the CCB, right, and those kinds of things. Most all of it was work programs. But anyway, it kind of evolved from there. And I won't say there was any kind of direct line between Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson. But Lyndon Johnson comes out with this Great Society program. And he had, and I think he had program on top of program in the thing, and I believe, Carl, kick me if I'm wrong, the only surviving program of that whole mess was his Head Start. Am I right on that?
Well, see, that yes, technically.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to be technical here, but anyway,
yes, technically, but no, in that all of it morphed into being called something else.
Yeah, but some of it just didn't work, whatever. But the point being is say it cost $1 million and it benefited 10 people. You know, those numbers are crazy. Some wag is going to say, hey, look, if you just would have sent the 10 people a $100,000 check, you wouldn't have had any poor people.
Well, right.
Essentially, right. It's hard not to look at that, because how much of it actually got to the people you're trying to help? How many thumbs were in there? And I don't think there were anywhere near as many thumbs then as there are now. I mean, then you didn't have community organizers, wasn't a full-time job like it is now everywhere, it seems. But, you know, I'm saying, so so Nixon comes out with a program called the negative income tax. It didn't really get anywhere, but I thought it was, in terms of being, you know, read properly, if you basically sat on your ass and didn't want to work, and didn't do anything, or you couldn't work. You know, I'm not saying everybody's got a bid. You'd get, say, $1,000 a month. But the minute you went out and got a job, even if you made $200, they didn't take $200 away from you. They took like $50 away from you.
Right.
So everything was accretive. It essentially encouraged you to go out and work at Walmart 2 days a month or whatever it is.
Right.
I mean, you know, or paint help your brother-in-law paint houses 2 Saturdays a month or something. It encouraged this to go up to the point where, you know, you were still maybe getting some of that after making, you know, I won't say a reasonable amount of money, but some. You never. It was done in such a way where it was a gradualistic. It wasn't like the minute I go out and work a day, I lose my check kind of thing. But so it was actually fairly well written. Now whether it would have worked or not, I don't know. But
I suspect the answer is no. It's but again, you know, I mean, okay, yeah, and I say no because we have some examples of it that have been tried at small scale and they have not worked. Okay, so I mean, empirically, I have evidence. Now, does that mean that that's just because it was designed wrong? Well, you know what? We always, I hear that every time that somebody puts one of these programs out there, it doesn't do what they said it was going to do. And they say, well, you know, it's the old trope. Socialism's great if they just do it right. Same thing with capitalism, right? Capitalism's great if they just do it correctly. And so I think the better answer to the question is that humans, we may be 250 years down the road from 1776, roughly, but humans really haven't changed all that much in terms of how brains work.
We have in some regards. I would say, Carl, that at the time Nixon's plan came out, now this is not, you know, if Mattie Weber here, you start playing Andy and Mayberry songs, but the society that I knew then, maybe because people lived in smaller houses or whatever it was, you really weren't comfortable sitting on your ass on your mother's couch when everybody else was working. You were not all that comfortable. You didn't get a chance to. You didn't have your own room down in the basement where you could shut the door and not work. I'm saying, if in those days, if you did that, very rarely would it just go to the drug person. I mean, you might drink it, but you're not going to, I mean, you might, you know, have a
well,
six.
A lot of people did drink it, okay, and I mean.
But I mean, it's not the same as going out and getting your shot of oxycodone. I mean, it wasn't.
No. But I mean, it's like, I don't know what your peer group is like from when you grew up and, you know, their parents and stuff. But I know what mine is, and for the most part, an awful lot of them are dead. Right, for one thing, right? I mean,
yeah,
I'm 61, all right? And an awful lot of the people in my peer group are literally dead. And the stories of the people who raised them to a large degree were dysfunctional at the level that, you know, a fifth of Jim Beam went down the hole every morning.
Well, it was huge alcohol consumption.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
Not in my hood, believe it or not. I mean, parents all like to drink. I mean, they'd go to everybody's houses and have a few cocktails, but
yeah.
And everybody. But it wasn't when I didn't see that much of it until I started working for a school board. God, were
oh, yeah,
you
no,
could,
well,
people you
I
couldn't
mean,
even you couldn't stand
oh,
next
no,
to during a the day. They smelled like they just came out of somewhere.
Well, not only that, I mean, but there was an awful lot of it when I was growing up that I didn't even, you know, it was not something that was in your face the way that the person stumbling on the street corner today is, right?
Yeah.
But it was there, and but then again, I mean, it's like I said, the human condition doesn't seem to change that much. We you know maybe we change how we hide it or you know what people consider to be shameful or whatever, but. I look at what's going on right now, and people say, yo, this is the worst possible thing that has ever happened from a standpoint of, you know, lack of cohesiveness between, you know, segments of society and, you know, the left and the right or whatever have you. And just recently, I had X play another one of their, oh, I don't like what you said, your suspended games. And so then I went back, though, and I... Since I'm sitting there in my chair and I'm saying, you know, I run my own infrastructure for my publication. Right? I don't rely on anybody else. I have my own software on a computer that I lease space on at one of the cloud providers. It'll eventually end up here because we're going to get fiber in the neighborhood here probably sometime this summer. They're out there digging holes in the ground right now, actually, string it. So I go and I take a look at the actual statistics, okay? Now, supposedly, I have something like 10,000 people that allegedly follow me, that are allegedly all humans, right? Because, you know, there's not supposed to be any bots. That was one of the things that Elon said he was going to do, is he was going to get rid of all the robots on X. And, of course, he didn't. But this is what he claims. There's supposedly there's 10,000 actual human pairs of eyeballs. And I go back and I look at January and December and, you know, the last few months of web traffic. And you would think that if half the people go on the site or on their phone once a day and they're following me, that since I post every one of my articles there, that it would surface that article to them and a decent percentage of those people would click that link and read the article, right? I mean, that's what you'd think.
You would, right?
And that's the entire point of social media, right, is to do that. Okay. In the entire month of January, there were a grand total of 6,000 links into my site from Twitter in total. That is about a 30th of what it should be if they aren't algorithmically burying anything that takes people off their page.
They might be. I mean, well, you know more about
well,
this
they,
than me.
Well, they are. They are. Okay.
All right, so what does that mean?
What this means is that if you, that the value equation runs one way to him, and he does it on purpose. By the way, he's not the only one that does it. I'm bagging on Elon right now, but Zuck does the same thing with Meta and Facebook.
They want to be the censor.
Chief, it goes beyond that.
They're Harold Janine on steroids, both of them.
Okay, here's the thing. Your stocks and jocks shows get posted up there. I follow you, okay? I almost never see them on my timeline.
Really?
They're algorithmically buried, and the reason is because if I click one of those links, I leave the site and I go somewhere else, and my eyeballs leave X, all right? It's not viewpoint discrimination. It's not why they're doing it. It's the other way around. Now, here's the problem. You have a podcast that people listen to, but I have a discussion forum, so when I post an article, people can make commentary on it. And quite frequently, the commentary that they make includes alleged news and other discussions that's taking place in other places. This is why we call it the World Wide Web, right? Because it all interconnects with each other.
Yeah, but you don't want connect if it connects to you. We know that.
Oh, but see, here's the problem. Up until this dust-up happened, if you posted a link to something on X, as far as I was concerned, I was perfectly okay with it. Well, there's a problem with this, and that is that he's getting all the value out of that, and I'm getting none, because he's not paying me for the clickbacks into his site. All right? So I changed my software's configuration, so X.com is considered a swear word, and it gets replaced with dots. So now you can't link things
from... This sounds like more of an hour-long discussion on Friday, but how exactly do you, if the internet is supposed to be open like this, and all of a sudden it appears that it isn't in a lot of places?
That's right.
If you wanted to, which I'm sure the current group doesn't, how would you fix that?
Well, the fix for this used to be, we used to run into this once in a while when I ran MCS because we had traffic exchange with people. And I've talked about this before. I mean, this is one of the things that Obama tampered with his so-called net neutrality nonsense. Because Netflix tried to exploit this into a one-way value proposition with the cable companies. The cable companies got mad and told them to pound sand. And then Obama comes in and tries to mandate this by law. All right. Now, that ultimately got thrown out. And ultimately, the way it was resolved was Netflix was forced to put content servers in the cable company head end, so the cable companies were not subsidizing their long-distance transport, which, by the way, is the right... That's what free markets do. They solve these problems, okay? And they did solve this problem. But for a period of time, Netflix essentially forced people who didn't want to buy Netflix subscriptions to pay for their infrastructure, because the cable company had to pay for the long-haul transport of data, and your bill had that in there, even though you may not have been a Netflix. Now, if you were a Netflix customer, then this was neutral to you. But if you were not...
Well, I'm not, and it pissed me off.
Well, then you, but you were forced to pay your next-door neighbor's part of his Netflix bill, even though you never actually saw this. Now, this is the kind of externality that people, you know, hey, listen, Elon, this is where I've got a problem with what's going on right now, in that Elon has a car company that exists because when you bought a Chevy, you were forced to pay him.
Right.
Okay? And that's the entire reason Tesla exists. Now, there are places where Elon has not done this, and SpaceX is one of them. All right? He is cheaper than the Ariane guys and, you know, the ULA guys and the other people in terms of cost per pound for getting things into orbit. He costs less. He costs less money. Well, guess what? If you cost less money, you are supposed to win, right? You do the same thing, but it costs less. You win in a market economy. The other guy loses. I have no problem with that. There's and some of the things that have come out of that. I mean, Starlink is it everything that's promised? No, marketing is marketing. It always has.
Well, how come with all these guys doing all this stuff, those two people are sitting up in the space station for a year?
Well, that, part of that is because Brandon did not want to give Elon a publicly visible win over the Boeing guys, and he actually told them not to go get him.
Who did?
Elon has a man-rated capsule. He has Dragon. Okay, he could have, and he was willing to go up there and get those guys.
Well, the Boeing thing ended up coming down okay. Why couldn't they just fix it and go up and get them?
Because the problem, well, they can't turn it around in, you know, 3 days. And
no, but it's been months.
Oh, I know, but, you know, is the Boeing program even viable at its cost structure when you've got a competitor that's doing it at half the money?
Well, it seems to me like nobody's there now.
Well, no. He was explicitly told not to go get them, and essentially deny docking permission. He was willing to go up there and go get them.
Well, how the hell are they going to get back now? I guess who's coming?
Well, now that Trump's in office, apparently they are going to send a Dragon capsule up there and go get those guys. But there is a lead time on that because the spacesuits that they have, which, you know, as you can imagine, are you know, yours won't fit me, right?
Yeah,
it's kind of like a pair of pants, but a little more important. Same sort of thing with dry suits for cave diving. They are kind of user specific. The ones that they have that they went up there in the Boeing capsule are not, you know, they're not the same as the ones that Dragon uses. And so you can't take a spacesuit from one company and plug it into the other guy's connections and have it actually function. And that is kind of important when you're coming back in through the atmosphere.
Well, how did they used to go get, have the Russians go get people and stuff?
Oh, because that was all those setups were compatible. So that was part of the ISS design. Okay, but Dragon is Elon stuff, and so they'll, I mean, that is not a horribly difficult problem to solve, but it'll take them, you know, 3-4 weeks to.
All right, in case, if assuming the other two guys are coming on and don't get to talk to you to Friday, let's take 2 seconds here. SP Futures are now down 39, and NASDAQ Futures down 160.
Yeah, we're leaking.
What do you make of this? I obviously, during the first Iraq war, all you did was stare at the news. This isn't crazy. Right. It isn't something that doesn't happen all the time, but. This I'm going to say mindless sort of trading where yesterday where we were up and then we go flying down, we're in the bleeper, for God's sake. Then all of a sudden the little rumor comes out that even though he swore that tariffs are going to start today, he really hasn't signed it, so maybe there's a last chance of a deal, and we ran up how many spook points on the close, and now we're right back down again. I mean, this is nuts, Carl. This is nuts.
Well, it is, but you know the thing is that This is the longest telegraphed tariff threat that I've, Trump said, if you don't cut the drugs off in 30 days, here comes the hammer. All right. And neither of those countries has done any, well, nor China, for that matter, has done anything in that regard. Now, to be fair...
Well, yeah, but now, I don't want to get into this, but we're getting our information from the administration. We don't know what the hell people are doing. I don't believe them for a second, no matter what they say.
You know what? Everybody lies in politics. Good morning. All right, we're going to take on the deficit problem. By the way, the PBMs within Medicare Advantage have been caught selling $60 a month drugs that people buy without having any insurance and billing Medicare $1,800 for it and saying, well, you got a great deal because the list price is $2,000.
Well, I had a we're going to have to shift over here to Joel, but I had a listener talk to me this weekend regarding their Eliquis. It's $690 a month, and it costs them $18 a year to make it.
This is exact, yeah. And by the way, the drug companies and the insurance firms, when Advantage was put in and all this stuff, you know, got started, they got a exemption in the system, just like you have with OMB, the guys that do the scoring for the CBO, that do the scoring for all the bills, that says that if the PBM says to CMS, here is the analysis that shows you that we're saving you money, Medicare is prohibited by law from going back and saying, you're full of BS. This guy over here is buying.
Let's also, in case you're not back this morning, let's also, Friday, let's talk a little bit about the role of a few people. There must have been something on TV. A few people have talked to me about pharmacy benefit managers and what they do and how they...
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Let's kick that to Friday. You think we have enough to talk about? S&P Futures down 32, NASDAQ Futures down 125. Should be right back with Mr. Joel Unkonen.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Ricky on the board. S&P Futures down 32. NASDAQ Futures down 124. We came in. They were pretty much mixed, but not anymore. We have unmixed. Dow Futures down 106. We're in Europe. You guys were up huge yesterday. DAX, however, not so up today. DAX down 550, that's 2.4%. Autos fall 4% as the Trump tariffs hit. FTSE down 43.5%. Those guys don't really, I guess they still make Jaguars, I'm not sure. CAC around down 117, 1.4. We're in Asia. We got the Nikkei is down 454, 1.2%. Hang Seng down 64, but these guys have been on a tear. It's only 0.3%. Shanghai is actually up 7.2%. So, again, those guys aren't agreeing today, which seems to be happening a lot lately. 10-year down 4 basis points, 4.13. So the 10-year rates have actually crept down here. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.46. Japan up a basis point, 1.42. Oil, which is right about around 70, is now lower than that, 67.48, down 89 cents. So oil is, people keep saying, $100 oil, $100 oil. Well, hope they're not buying all those futures because they haven't been making any money. Brent down $1.13, 70.49. Natural gas down 4 cents, 4.08. RBOB unchanged at 2.18. Gold, which has been up, down, up, down, is now back in the mid-2900s, up 32 bucks, 29.33. Silver up 20 cents, 32.51. We've been trying to get longer in there yesterday, and I think we did a little bit, so maybe this will be a good one today. Pretty good, guys. Copper down 5 cents, 4.55. Foreign exchange, the dollar is... actually up a little bit here today, but still, I got the euro at 105, British pound 127, so the dollar was down, now it's back up a little bit, but it's been kind of jumping around now. I think it's starting to get a little weaker. I don't know what these guys are thinking or talking about. And well, tomorrow we'll talk a little bit about the Canadian dollar and the peso. We'll dig into that because obviously that's part of this whole mess. Crypto down 2,200, 83,498, so the $7,200 rally on Sunday is gone. That's bizarre. Yesterday, just a way of review, Dow was down 649, S&P down 104, NASDAQ down 497. So it was bad days all across everywhere yesterday. Air Force Traffic Weather Sports.
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in Chicago. 45 degrees right now with a high of 50, so the temperature is looking real nice, but there is increasingly windy today with periods of rain and a thunderstorm. It's actually raining right now, so there can be ponding on streets and highways. Be careful of that. Tonight will be more of the same, periods of rain and a thunderstorm with a low of 45 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 52 degrees right now with a high of 66. Partly sunny, windy, and cooler. Tonight will be clear and cool with a low of 45 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's 12 minutes. We're looking at 27 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 29 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 23 minutes. And Iman Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 36 minutes. Let's talk about sports real quick. MLB spring training is going on right now. Yesterday we got Diamondbacks beating the Cubs 10-2 and the Athletics beating White Sox 5-4. Today we got Padres playing the Cubs at 2:05 p.m. NBA, today we got the Cavaliers at Bulls at 7 p.m. and the Clippers at Suns at 9 p.m. Lastly, yesterday, Blackhawks beat Kings 5-1.
Do we have Joel?
Yeah, good morning,
Chief. How are you, bud? I was thinking about you the other day when Illinois clobbered Michigan.
Oh, I mean, they played fantastic. Well, they started hitting threes. I went to the game. I mean, we had been winning a lot of close games and finally had a clunker. I guess the positive thing is there's a lot of basketball to be played, Chief. You have we have Maryland on Wednesday. We have if we can win that, then we have a chance to tie for the Big Ten title with Michigan State on Sunday. Then you have the Big Ten tournament, and then you got the big dance. So hopefully we'll break out of this funk soon. But Illinois looked fantastic. Couple really good players on that team.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah, a couple good guys.
Yeah, they took it to us, Chief.
Well, whenever somebody starts talking about parity, somebody else, some wag always lobs in, you mean mediocrity. I don't know that it's mediocrity. There's a lot of pretty good teams around. I don't know if there's any with the four terrific players, but I know what I want to ask you is this kid from Duke, in today's world, evidently last night they were, you know, screaming one more year, one more year. They're making pretty good scratch-o in college. It's still because of the way the NBA, you have to be there 4 years for the big contract. You want to get there as soon as you can.
I mean, he can, you know, he can make some good money there staying at Duke. But I think the biggest thing is that, you know, the chance of injury, right? Like, why stick around? You know, get into the NBA, start playing, start getting your time in there so you can get the max contract. I'm just looking. They list him as a guard at 6'9". I don't think I would like to cover him, a 6'9 guard. But, Duke's looking good with him. Auburn's looking good. Alabama has had their stumbles. Michigan State. Remember Jason Richardson? He was he played in the NBA several years ago.
Yeah.
His kid is playing for Michigan State, so I'm looking forward to the tournament. I look at it as there's several teams here that they could take the crown. I look at it as parity. I don't look at it as mediocrity. I'm glad to see there's a myriad of teams that can win.
How many of the best players? How many are in that? I haven't heard boo about this all year. How many are we going to have an NBA draft where, you know, five or six of the top 10 are going to come from the development league and not from the
NCAA? Yeah, that isn't that taking the fun out of things, Chief? Like I poo-pooed it a little bit, and then there was these twins playing, the Thompson twins, and the Pistons picked up one, Asar Thompson, and he's actually playing pretty well. So that development league, between the development league and Europe, you're seeing a lot of the players come out of the draft. So it's not your mom pa's NBA draft anymore.
No, I was, of course, I don't know why sometimes, you know why you do, because you have to and you're supposed to, but I was talking to some younger people the other day regarding high school or college basketball, and I mentioned that the women are starting to be a much bigger draw than they were, and how it's setting up to be sort of a different sort of deal, to where, by and large, they stay 4 years, they get names for themselves, they're getting their NIL contracts in college that they seem to take with them to the pros, and they are very marketable, and it's becoming a whole different way of doing business than the men, where the men just can't wait to get to the NBA, it seems. Mm-hmm. I don't know that the guys are as recognizable. They probably are getting paid by the school somehow, but you don't see the Notre Dame men's team on State Farm. You see the women on State Farm, you know, because they look better. You know, but I mean, they're also it seems like it's going two different directions, doesn't it? The women, yeah, and the men.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a little bit. You know, it's catching attention. There's some good players out there,
and the personalities. You can put them on TV, and I'm not, you know, dissing the guys, but I'm saying the we used to have that when you and I were younger, when all the guys stayed 4 years. You had personalities in college. You couldn't wait for, you know, Spencer Haywood to play Bill Walton or something like that, or Kareem Jabbar, or whoever. Well, he was a little cinder back then. I mean, these guys, you were able to develop these kind of things in college, these rivalries. And now it seems like, well, you've got some guys that are there 5 and 6 years, and the other guys that are one and done. It just seems like they're having trouble deciding where they're going, where the girls, by and large, are there 4 years, right?
Yeah.
And you develop.
Yeah, they do.
And you know, I mean, go ahead.
Yep. Because the money's not there yet. But, Chief, we're talking a lot about sports here. And holy macro, Chief. I mean, give me your I'm going to interview you, Chief. Where's the bottom in this market? Is there a bottom?
I think we got a ways to go. I hope not. But why more people don't want to be hedged and protected here, I have no idea. I mean, you're not trading the last 20 years. You got to trade this year. The amount of information. Well, Joel, you and I have been through this before. We went through the first Gulf War, which every time the market moved and every move coming out of Washington. We went, you know, we've done other times when it's like this, right? 2007. But this is every sort of thing appears like front running out of somewhere, doesn't it? I don't know how else we got on here, but it seems like we have. And yesterday, how many points did we run back because somebody announced that even though Trump had announced tariffs, he hadn't actually signed it yet? So the rumor was there was a late breaking deal. What did we do? Run 50 points in the last 10 minutes?
I know about that, Chief.
Amount, how do you? I've heard stories from some of the big firms that, you know, provide markets to the trading floors. They said February was like their worst month ever. I mean,
it is such a headline driven market right now. And it is at the point where, I don't know. I mean, I just don't see a bottom in sight. And I just, you know, I'm not an investment advisor. I'm no guru in the markets. I would just caution people because we've had this buy the dip mentality for a long time, and it's worked for a really long time. But I think anyone that, you know, is out there, like, I got to own NVIDIA at 111.19 where it's trading. Just look at a monthly chart. Look at a monthly chart, for heaven's sake. Look at something. Look at the SPY. And just look at the perspective. And give yourself a longer-term perspective. Now, I'm not saying that we're crashing and burning and going to 5,000. I'm not going to be some ugly perma bear. But if you look at the monthly chart, we haven't even gone down yet. Started to go down. And I think people, I don't know, you know, your investors out there, your traders, or, you know, exactly what your audience is. Ours is a little bit more fast moving, you know, in and out, buying the dip, selling the rip. But I just think I think if I'm speaking to your longer term investors out there, I mean, just look at what this market's done. I mean, since COVID, and even the pullback of 22. So that's just a cautionary note on my part. You know,
Joel, you have you probably got to get to Kenny here in a second, but you do have an idea. I'm going to say this way: you have no idea of how many people I talk to that are in their 70s and 80s that have all their dough, just flat out long. which has worked fine for a long time. And I just mentioned, guys, you know, we can't trade last year. We can't trade in that last decade. You know, someplace, somewhere, this is going to change. And they go to their current investment advisor. My advice is to not sell. Every single time you've wanted to sell before, it's come right back. This time is no different. And but the thing of it is, now these people aren't working. Now they're 500,000 when they were working is now 1.5 million, and they're not working. They've changed. It's not so much that me or you saying the market's changed, because we'll figure out whether we're right or not. But the point is, they've changed, and they don't get it. And it's there's nothing you can do about it, Joel. There's nothing you can do.
Okay.
Except if we do go flying down and the phone rings, you just say, "I told you so." Wait,
I can't sell here.
Yeah. I'm not.
I can't sell here.
Or I can't. I got no room for your account right now. That happened in 2007. I had people off. John and I were on the score. guys were coming in with 25 active positions that they had at E-Trade or some damn place. Nobody to help them. I go, "What are you doing?" I didn't have 25 active positions when I was on the trading floor and had three clerks that knew what they were doing. Yeah, but these guys said there was no. You got to be careful.
Maybe Kenny can give you a little more.
All right. You take care of that. Keep you guys in there. I want to talk to you about Michigan all the way through this.
I know, it was so funny. We'll see.
Yep.
We got a big two games. We'll talk about that next week. Okay.
Yep. Kenny, how are you? Give us the solution.
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. You sound good. I saw some of the stuff you sent. Some of the stuff you sent me, I can't open. I don't know why. I got this thing so restricted here because of all the different protections on this machine. Because FINRA wants it and everything, but I can't open some of it. But I imagine are you still gesturing like you always did?
Yeah. Yes, I'm still gesturing. I'm up in Orlando this morning. I have to give a presentation at 9 o'clock this morning. But one way or the other, I was listening to your conversation, and clearly it feels like it's a little bit different, right? It feels like it's a little bit uglier right now. But I think to his point, if you look at the long-term chart, where are we off? We're off 5% off the highs in the S&P, maybe 8%. I'm not in front of my computer right now, so I can't actually...
About that.
And so while it feels uncomfortable, we're still very much within the range, right? What's considered normal. Now, there are individual names certainly that are getting whacked even more. Some of the tech names are down, 20%, 18% like that. But I think because some of those were overstretched, and we were talking about that the markets had been, everyone ran. It was a crowded trade. They had to have it, and it got ahead of itself. So I think some of that is just a normal correction. Some of it is some angst over kind of the building geopolitical. I don't even think so much over the tariffs. I think it's more about kind of this geopolitical stuff that's causing a lot of angst, I think, for people. And that just causes nervousness, and nervousness causes people to hit the sell button. I don't really think anything in our country is changing that dramatically yet in terms of economics. So we're starting to see a little bit of maybe some question. Yeah, but I still think for the most part, our labor market's robust. We saw that the 10-year is now kissing 4.1%. That's down from 4.6 just, 3 weeks ago. Trump said he was going to focus on the 10-year because that's what was important. Interest rates, mortgage rates have come down. Oil prices are going to now go lower. You saw the news about the Saudis coming out, and they're going to increase production in April. And so that's going to cause an oversupply of oil. So you should see oil prices coming down. That will be beneficial for inflation, for transportation costs, for production. So all that stuff should come together. All that stuff is the good stuff, right? The stuff that makes people uncomfortable is when they see NVIDIA trade from $140 to $112, I think, where it's trading right now.
Well, it's $28 times 25 billion shares outstanding. It's like a lot of money.
Right. It's a lot of money. For sure it's a lot of money. But I also think and we've talked about this before, I think that they had taken NVIDIA to way overstretch, right? It was such a crowded trade. It was so exciting. I get it. AI, I get it. But the pendulum always swings too far to the left, and it swings too far to the right. So it's got to come back and adjust. I think that's what we're seeing now. Do I think it's the beginning of the end? I don't. But do I think it could be a little bit choppy? Yes. But I had been saying that since last November. I thought the first quarter was going to be choppy, and look where we are. We're choppy.
Well, we've given up virtually everything in the queues that we made since the election. So We've given up, for lack of a better term, the Trump bubble. Right. It doesn't mean we didn't give up the 15% we were up last year yet.
Right, right. Or the 20% the year, 30% the year before. Right. I mean, like you said, you have to look at the, if you're a long-term investor, you have to look at the long-term chart and see, you know, obviously it also depends on when you started to get in. If you got in last month, yeah, it looks really ugly. But if you're someone that's been in the market for, you know, 5 or 8 or 10 years, relatively speaking, it doesn't look that ugly. Does it feel uncomfortable? Sure. But is it a disaster yet? No, I don't think it's a disaster yet at all. And I think if people have they're high quality names. They know what they own. They know why they own it. And the thesis hasn't changed for those particular names. Then you're right. But to your point, people should be hedging themselves, whether they're doing it, you know, via options, whether they're doing it in some of the contra trades, you know, like the DOG and the SNH and the PSQ, or even the VIXY, right? The VIXY ETF,
yep.
Which is a contra trade for people that are less maybe sophisticated or maybe less, don't really know. That's an easy way to hedge yourself, because those trades all move up when stocks move down, and they've acted the last couple of days. They've been on a tear, naturally, because markets have been under pressure.
Those are really hard for a retail person to manage.
They're not long term investments, so they are, though. They're very. You have to use them specifically, right? So you don't buy them and just hold them for 10 years. You buy them and hold them for when you think, you know, during when times of volatility, right? You just have to be able to. You have to be a little bit nimble.
Well, but picking. Whenever I, I don't want to go into this because it's more of a sales job on my stuff, but when I talk about the protected index program, which is what we do for a lot of people, not everybody, I would say that the idea that people can pick the days they need to be insured, it's like picking the day you have your car insurance, you feel good, you worked out yesterday, I don't need it today. The next day, I had a couple of glasses of wine last night, maybe I'll have it today. if you start doing that, how insane is it?
Yeah. Well, right. No, I hear you. If you're gonna pick it like that, but like if you were getting nervous over this quarter, and then you started investing in the DOG or the PSQ or the SH, and you were just building a position ahead of what you thought was going to be the nervousness, you know, then you're protected. It shouldn't be right to a lot of people. If you're a trader type, it's easy because you're in and out. That's what you do all day. But if you're a long-term investor and you have a view, or you talk to your advisor, you talk to whoever you're talking to, you have a view, then you can protect it more that way. But again, they're not long-term investments, right? You don't hold them, you don't buy them to hold them for 10 years like you might, you know, Verizon or Nvidia or IBM.
Well, and then I just, you don't, the phenomenon, Kenny, is some of the long-term investors have done so much better over the last several years than they ever thought they were going to.
Right.
That they really aren't going to puke out at 5%. They almost feel that they owe the market something back, which is kind of weird. But somebody thinks they might have been up to 2 million, they're up to 2.5 million. The question is, when do people get afraid? What's the number? I don't think it's 5%, but is it 12?
Yeah, I think if we approach 10%, people are going to start to get more nervous. I do think that seems to be a level that causes people to become a little bit nervous, right?
I would love to have obviously you're doing all this good stuff on all these different shows. Excuse me, my brother did a thing years ago, you know, and he handles a lot of the clients, more so than I do, that do their own stuff. The guys that I handle, pretty much I just do all their stuff for them.
Yeah.
But somebody asked him this deep question at one of these seminars, and he actually spent about 5 minutes on the answer. And he's talking about people. Why do people sell on the bottom instead of selling the top?
Right.
And Dan went through a long routine. He's much quieter than me, imagine that. But very introspective dude. And he said, you know, people don't sell because something's high or whatever. They think it's going higher. They sell because they get to a point where they can't lose anymore.
Right.
And that's when you sell. You sit there and go, okay, we needed to retire on $1 million, and it sounds like a lot of money, but it's not if you have no pension.
Right.
He goes, we need to retire on $1 million. Somehow, by luck of God or by Obama or Biden or Trump or somebody, it's now $2.5 million. Okay.
Right.
And and we're fine there. We're actually fine at two. We might be fine at 1.5. And finally, if it's at 1.4, we go, we got to get out because we can't. It's a whole different mentality than you would actually think coming from a trader perspective.
Right.
But it, right. But it's there. And I, when Dan gave this, I'm sitting there, God, first of all, he's my brother. Wow. How smart he is. I mean, it is. And people in the crowd are looking at him like, I never heard something like that before, but it makes so much sense. It's scary.
Right. Right. They have a number in their head where they think this is what they needed.
Yeah.
Right. They can survive on that. So once it gets there, then they hit the sell button. But you might get people that, you know, a little bit more proactive, that if they feel like maybe it's going there, they start to, you know, they would say to you, they'd have the conversation, it's you, it's me, whatever. And you start to trim a little bit of positions. You don't get panicky, but you start to trim a little bit, keep it in cash until such time as it settles down. Typically, that's always the way to do it. Right.
Because it
will settle down. I just think that the markets right now, there's a lot going on, and I think it's much more the geopolitical stuff than I think it's the tariff stuff. I think it's the nervousness over what happened last week with Ukraine. I think it's the way that people are suggesting that, you know, that ended, and now this morning how, you know, he's put any more financial help on hold until Zelensky comes to the table and wants to have a real conversation about bringing this war to an end, because to their point. You know, how much longer can we just sit here as Americans and just keep giving money for, you know, there has to be an end game. There has to be an end game. Now, how we get there is, you know, a conversation.
But don't,
I'm not saying that, I'm not saying I agree necessarily with how these last couple of days have played out, but there has to be an end game.
It sort of depends on the end game, okay? And what your feelings are. I mean, what if...
Right.
What if Roosevelt would have gone to Churchill and said, buddy, you don't have the cards, and we're tired of giving you money. You got to give this guy the continent, and we'll take India and Hong Kong for the money we've gave you so far, and that's the new world. Just suck it up.
But I don't think that was, well, at least in my mind, I don't necessarily think that that was the way, right, that was what was going to happen. I think there was a much more methodical conversation about, okay, how do we bring this to an end, and how can we do this without you know, saving face and without anyone feeling like they get punched in the face? How can we do this? And I thought the conversation was going to go in the right direction, but it seems to have veered left, and I think that's what's now causing.
Well, there doesn't seem to me to be any feeling. First of all, when you start telling somebody that they're not dressed properly, the minute they get out of the car, doesn't start the thing too well.
No.
But I mean, so but belaying all that, this isn't necessarily a deal. We can't confuse the victim from the oppressor here. I mean, at some point.
Agreed.
Now,
agreed.
I think we all realize that somewhere along the line they're not going to get all the property back.
Right.
But also some question that you can't just tell the guy you don't have the cards, your country's losing, just give it up. I mean, that's not what people do either. I mean,
no, and I think that's, and I agree with you, which is why I said I don't agree with what I've seen over the last couple of days, but I think that's what's causing an elevated level of angst amongst, you know, the markets, right? People getting more nervous because I think the majority of people don't agree with the way it's going down, right? Which is why I think we're getting that elevated. I think it's much more that than I think it's tariffs. Well, that's my point.
Well, the tariffs, I mean, I really just wonder what is the message. I'm having trouble speaking Trump, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what everything the guy says. People seem to believe, and yet I never heard of the idea that we spent three. If you ask anybody right now, we spent $300 to $500 billion.
Yeah.
On Ukraine, and yet I went through three different estimates of how much we've given them, and it's nowhere near there. That's by our own estimates, by the European estimates, by somebody else. It's somewhere 171 to 125 to 90. It's nowhere near to 300 to 500, and yet we seem to be able to just talk these numbers out, and people sort of believe people at those levels, and yet,
right?
But I mean, you know, and I think there's a lot of people now that believe that this tariff is not going to hurt them because somehow or another, and I hope that, you know, that Trump doesn't have this lack of knowledge. I'm sure he doesn't. But I mean, our tariff tax revenue is $73 billion.
Right.
Our income tax is $2.6 trillion. If anybody thinks for a second that you're going to lower the income tax and make it up by tariffs, what voodoo numbers are these people looking at? But right now, an awful lot of people think, what's the problem? The Canadians and Mexicans are going to pay these tariffs. I'm going to say 80% of Americans don't realize that they're the ones that are going to pay the tariffs.
I think that might have been the case that people thought that, but I think there's a realization that, you know, the tariffs are going to affect you and me. I think people are starting to recognize. But I also think that people are, at the moment, willing to suck that up if it creates better trade agreements, if it creates more, you know, more equal trade agreements across the spectrum.
How does anybody even know they're bad, though, Kenny? How does anybody even know? I was talking to Carl regarding, Nixon's plan for. I mean, does anybody even? I mean, it is so hard to read this stuff and even figure out what the ramifications are. I mean, I don't even. Does anybody even? If Kenny Pulcheri's new head of General Motors, how many? If the transmissions are made there. Or something, parts are made there, they're assembled in Cleveland, they go back and they put them in a Chevy in Toronto, and a Chevy comes here. Are we talking about tariffs every single time something crosses the border?
I believe they are. Yes, I believe.
So we're going to pay tariffs four or five times on a part.
If I understand it correctly, that's correct.
Wow.
Every single time it goes back and across the border, there's a tariff. Right? It's almost like a value-added tax. But I think that's the part that needs to be fixed, right? And so if you have to create some pain in order to get people to come to the table and say, you know, we need more equality in trade agreements, just because you can't be taking advantage. That's the part that he wants to correct.
But in you're a pretty intelligent economics guy. Have you ever heard of somebody putting tariffs on a U.S. product made overseas? I mean, tariffs... You put tariffs on Mercedes because they were screwing with Cadillac. You didn't put tariffs on Chevys to come back to be sold here.
I hear you, but I think what he's trying to do is turn the manufacturing from Mexico, bring it back to America, make the product here, create jobs in America, create a stronger U.S. economy by producing the products here, right? The fact that it always amazed me, the fact that we have... All our pharmaceuticals are made in India and China, like drugs that people need every day. It's amazing to me that, you know, that, to me that looks like a national security issue. The fact that we let these foreign countries make our drugs and send them to us is amazing to me. I'm all for the U.S. making our own drugs.
I'm
all for that. But I'm also all for, you know, to his point about bringing. You know, coming back to America, make the products here, invest in America.
What are the chances yesterday at noon or 1:30 when we're flying down in the market, and all of a sudden the rumor is there's been a deal, the tariffs might be off because he hadn't signed the thing yet?
Right.
I don't think Pulcheri Chief Inc. are going to go out and buy a piece of property to build a car plant if this is liable to be off and on again by the same day. How the hell are we going to look forward and make a plan when the guy jump? It's on again, it's off again. For God's sake, it's like having sex. You're in and you're out. I mean, what are we doing here?
I think you have to wait. You know, you can't react every headline, right? It has to wait until it's a signed, sealed, delivered deal. That's all. So yeah, you can't react. If they say, well, now it's off, but maybe it's on again, you have to wait. I think actually that, you know, they've now imposed them. I kind of thought there was going to be this 11th hour deal last night. I was surprised when I woke up this morning that there wasn't, but there isn't. And so they impose these tariffs. So let's just see what happens over the next couple of days or weeks, whether or not, you know, they're going to come to the table legitimately, all sides, us included, and to renegotiate, right?
What are we even renegotiating? What is wrong with Canada that I'm missing?
Well, see, I don't profess to know all that because I'm not in that position, so I'm not exactly sure. But what I know, if I believe to what they tell us, is that trade agreements are not equal, and that some countries are taking advantage of the U.S. Then okay, then tell me what's not equal about them, and let's fix it. So I'm willing to kind of sit back and let the people that negotiate it and that know that do that. I'm not going to be out here and tell you that I think, you know, Canada's no good or Mexico's, you know, the trade agreements are wrong. I'm depending on what I'm hearing from, elected officials in the administration and people that conduct, you know, talk to Larry. This would be a great conversation to have with Larry Kudlow because he'd be right in the middle of it, right?
Well, you know, two things that I've foolishly did in my life out of all of them. One, I actually went through the wage and price controls. That was in my time, believe it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, I was our guy at Pullman to go through the stuff and say, how does this affect us?
Right.
It was so friggin' complicated, Kenny. You would think, and you're not a simple man, you would say, guess what? They just froze the prices of gasoline at the place down on the corner. My gas won't be up tomorrow. No. If it came to you, if somebody along the line got the okay because of the law, because they got it more expensive from the guy before them, they got to pass it on, then they got to pass it on, the price of gas could have doubled the next day. Within, because somebody got in there because that guy could raise it. God help you if you said, I got the job I now have, I'm doing more than the other job. Well, I can't raise your wages. Look at what it says right here. I can't wage and price control. The amount of complications in there, how it advantaged some people who had their nose up the ass of government versus other people was scary. And the last time Trump was in, we went through this tariff thing. I foolishly, because you can get all this. Well, I can get some of it. I go online and I look at the tariff stuff. Kenny, it's like 1,000 pages long.
Yeah.
So I go to page like 440, and it was the page on cottage cheese.
Right.
I'll bet you didn't know there's like 50 different kinds of cottage cheese. Small curd, less than 2% milk fat. Every one of them had a little bit of a tariff or not a tariff. And, you know, some idiot somewhere cared about every one of those lines. It's got his nose into Washington, whether his thing got a tariff or his didn't. Do we really want that?
No, we don't want that. I don't want that. Certainly not where I'm going. But that is part of what makes it up, right? Part of what makes up the whole process.
But to think that it's fair, that all of a sudden everything coming in from Canada is going to be 10%, don't think that for a second.
Right.
Somebody somewhere saying, well, you can't do this on, or maybe you can't do it on transmissions, or you can't do it on something else. There's going to be exceptions, unless these guys are so straight, which I sure look like it to me. But there was nothing straight in wage price controls. There was nothing straight in the last tariffs. You know, why the hell aren't we lobbyists right now?
You know, when I was a kid, I thought I wanted to be a lobbyist. I'm glad I'm not.
We'd have our what do you call it, sky boxes at every nice stadium to take people. We'd only drink the best booze, and we'd be talking in Washington all day. We'd be hanging out with all the senators, working out.
Yeah,
not a bad do.
No, not a bad one at all. Listen, I got to jump.
Take care of yourself. SP futures down 37. NASDAQ futures down 150. Do we have Professor Hale?
Hey Tom,
how are you, bud?
Well, doing pretty good. I got locked out of X.
You and Carl?
Yeah, I posted something. It must have been the thing I posted yesterday about President Obama in 2014 at a presidential debate. Remember him ridiculing Romney? He said something like, hey, Mitt, the 1980s are calling and they want their foreign policy back. Because Mitt had claimed that Russia was the number one geopolitical threat. I posted that in a YouTube video, and apparently that got me banned or locked out of my X account. It's not all those people who, the MAGA and the diehard progressives, who are all of a sudden pro-war, cursing me out for the last week. They're not apparently getting locked, but me sharing a tweet where I'm agreeing with President Obama gets me locked out. So I can't log in. I can't appeal. I can't. I passed several tests to try to get it open, and X just locked me out. So I found a link to request that they cancel my premium membership and put me back at basic. And if they don't respond to it, I'm going to contact my bank and commence a fraud investigation. Because I signed up for the Blue Check Mark premium account. Because I wanted to support Elon.
I wouldn't even know what that is, but go ahead.
Well, you pay extra, you get longer tweets. And I only did it. I only did it because I wanted to support Elon's free speech effort by taking over Twitter. And if this is the way they're going to treat me, a paying customer,
all we did was shift the censor. Hell, we didn't go for free speech.
Yeah. I mean, I shared a President Obama something I agreed with President Obama. I mean, how does that get you locked out of X?
You can't agree with President Obama. What if you were back to Clinton saying that the most dangerous person in the world was Osama bin Laden, and all of a sudden the two towers go down? Nobody believed Clinton either.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I just requested they restore my basic account because I'm not going to pay for it anymore.
See, I can't do any of that stuff because if anything I do is considered, believe it or not, communication to customers.
Yeah.
It's like the whole world is my customer. Where are they? I don't see them, but evidently they are.
Well, it's like I was listening to this guy. He has a Twitter account where he follows Nancy Pelosi's trades. And then he's built an app where people can put money into the app, and they'll invest their money according to Nancy Pelosi trades. And apparently, she does really, really well. And I think Adam Kinzinger, Dan Crenshaw from Texas also has a similar.
I think there's my nephew goes on one of those sites where they track all these guys' stuff.
Yeah, Ben Crenshaw, the injured SEAL. He apparently makes some really coincidentally great trades. You know?
Well, if you have access to the Trump stuff 5 minutes before he does it, you're making a fortune.
Oh yeah, you gotta be making a fortune.
Well,
right?
you were 50 points in the spoo yesterday when somebody leaked out. Boy, this is all of a sudden news hit CNBC and other places that even though he had said the tariffs were going to start at midnight, he hadn't actually signed the paperwork. This is at 2:35, 2:40 Central Time. The spoos, which were down 100, closed down, I don't know, 60 or something. It was some amazing 40 or 50 point run. Then of course, now that he signed it, we're right back down the same 50, right? Or 40. Yeah. So I've never seen, and to think, I know people, you know, I was going to say want to kiss his ass, it's just an amazing thing, but the fact is, I don't think there's any morality there whatsoever on front running trades. You know, I don't think there has been in the last five administrations. That's why I really want all my people to have some sort of hedge on, because whatever happens, you don't get the full blow. You know, and I'm good at doing that. And people just they want to be believers somehow, hell, and they think that as long as they're I don't want people to make all this money for 15 years and give it all back. I've seen it before. I saw it happen in 2000. We had one client. Unfortunately, I don't know, it's been so long. I'll give the whole story, but the guy was a big. He was an executive at Oracle, right? So he meets us at some seminar, and he gets all his stock at Oracle. Now, what he didn't tell me. Full disclosure, he told me that he had stock options, but he didn't. It was his mistake, because I would have known otherwise. Plus, I'm not his tax guy or his that kind of thing. I'm just his broker. But he didn't tell me that he didn't get stock options. He actually got stock at a lower price. So say the stock was at $10, and when they gave it to him, say it was 70, which is about where it was. That 60 is ordinary income, which is a big bleep up in the tax law, which of course will never get changed. So you almost have to owe it to yourself to sell it there, or sell enough of it to where you can pay the taxes. Because if it drops down to 50 from 70, you have $60 of ordinary income, and now you've got $20 of capital loss. And if you don't have any capital gain, you can only take $3,000 capital loss per year against your ordinary income. So when the thing is at 70, he doesn't tell me any of this stuff, right? He says, well, I just need like some Armageddon puts in case something really bad happens, like to the world, because nothing can go on with Oracle. So why don't we buy like the 60 puts, okay? So we pay like, you know, whatever, 50 cents for them. Stock goes to 55. Okay, so now he's down 15, and we pick up, you know, 4.5 on the puts, which is something, but it's not the way I would have protected it, right? Especially if I knew his tax situation. And man, it's down to 50. I can't believe Oracle's trading 50. Why don't we just in case, you know, something really happens and, you know, the chairman gets shot or something, let's buy like the 45 puts. Okay. Well, then the stock goes to 40. So he's down another 10 and we're up another, you know, $4, four and a quarter, four and a half, say. We're still not, in my mind, we're not cutting it here by any stretch, right? I'm thinking, we're up $9. I wanted to protect the guy at 70, but he would have none of it. And by the way, if I knew that he had tax liability at 70, he didn't want to do it, I would have said I don't want the account, to be honest with you. I couldn't have bared looking at it. And sure enough, the stock goes like to 20, because at 40, there's no way Oracle could go any further. And it went like to 20 or 15. God knows where it went. And I'm sitting there going, okay, the dude is down $50. I managed to talk him into saving 9 of it. I guess it's better than a sharp stick in the eye, but I didn't feel so hot about it. I mean, this stuff, it can happen, Hal. Nobody, especially those stocks were silver priced in 2000, 2001. The QQQs did not go down 5 or 10% like people are talking about on TV. They went down 80%, which I'm not at all predicting. But whenever somebody says it can only go 10%, like, who made you the deity?
Yeah.
I mean, I stood around in the OEX pit in 1987 on Friday, and I knew I had a bad position coming in on Monday. I did fine on Friday, but I had stuff that was going off the board. So all my long puts were going off the board, and I couldn't swing them to Monday's puts. So I knew I had I had problems on Monday. I'm sitting there going, the market's already down, whatever the hell it was, 15%. And I go, okay, Kennedy got shot, it was down like 8. Eisenhower's heart attack, it was down like 9. We're already down 15. I should be okay. I wasn't. It was down another 22% on Monday. So the idea that you think, or you let people tell you, this is only as far as it can go, hell, you can't do that. Even if 95% of the time they're going to be right, it's the other 5 you got to worry about, right? Or the other 2 or 3 or 4.
There's a reason why the hurricane cone is shaped the way it is, right? The further into the future you go, the worse your predictions get.
And, you know, this idea that we have 5%, the market is 5% vulnerability. For God's sake, it's up 50% in 2 years. Where does this 5% come from?
Yeah.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, a lot of these companies have grown into their numbers. I mean, some of the earnings are, some of them look better than they did a couple of years ago. So I'm not, you know, but when Microsoft's trading 382, it's got real high revenue to per share prices in my mind. If it was trading 300, I wouldn't be shocked. I'm not predicting it. I'm not going out and buying puts for my people today. Because, you know, it's been here for a while. The market seems comfortable at these levels. But if it was 300, it wouldn't be like you and I go, man, how could it get there, right?
Yeah. I got a question for you, Tom. Yep. How does a young person who's been trading, who traded from basically, like, I don't know, 2010. They've been doing it for 10 years, from 2010 to 2020, just before the COVID. When you would talk to somebody like that, how different is their perspective? Because if everybody remembers out there listening, interest rates were near zero. Right? How is their perspective different from yours, given that, you know, you maybe started doing this when interest rates were, you know, 15%, yeah.
You know, their perspective is really a lot different, because there really has not, up until a few years ago, there wasn't a, you know, interest rates were up and down, but basically they went from 15 to zero pretty steadily over, a 30-year period?
Yeah, yeah.
But here's one that I could actually go back and somewhere I have it buried in my calculations, but your class would love it. When I started in I think it was December of 80 or January of 81, CD rates were like, I'm going to say 15 and a half. And I was pretty bullish, because there were companies that were still, I mean, the Dow was like 800, right? Give or take. Mm-hmm. 800, not 8,000, 800. And it was pretty obvious to me that the companies were priced, for God's sake, hell, they were 6 times PE and dividends of you know, 8-9%, the prices were down so low. For the next 18 months, you know, I started when I had 10 grand in my account, right? I was straight on the trading floor, different era. So I tried to be long, but I was early. But the weird part was, between the time I started in August of 82, which were roughly 18, 19 months, your CD rates went from, say, 15.5 down to 12.5 or 12. So they actually made a huge correction to the, I'll use the term normalcy, right? But people had not made a dime in the market since 1967. The market was the same price it was in 1967. So if you were to go into a cocktail party and said, I'm going to go cash in my CD and go find my mutual fund guy who's probably painting houses at the time, and I'm going to put it in the market, they'd have put you in a straitjacket, cut you off in the bar, and thrown you out the front door. In fact, the period of time when the interest rates went from 15 to 12 or thereabouts, the market went down another 20% my first 18 months I was in the business. And the correction was already happening on the interest rate side. But people were so dead set against it that you just never put money in the market. And one of my uncle used to tell me the old joke was, you know, I bought the name of the toilet paper? I bought Northern Tissue during the crash and got wiped out. You know, that was the joke, right? So, but I mean, if you look at before the COVID stuff all started, when these interest rates started to go from 0 to 4, the market, instead of realizing this is a tone change of some sort, the market was actually up another 20%. It was the actual mirror image of 1980, only the opposite direction. But you and I would know that the market is not, your stream of income is not worth as much at 4.5% as it was at 1.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, at 1, it's infinite, damn near, right?
Yeah, I just wonder if a lot of this movement is just people with a short time horizon. They got out of college and they think the world is the world in which they're living in, instead of a world that has a longer history.
But they,
and I go back when I was a little kid in high school, hanging out with my buddy Steve Paul, and he'd go over to the car dealerships in Hermiston, Oregon, and price out Trans Ams. And at the time, Trans Ams were like $14,000, and the interest rate was 14%. And at the time, that seemed perfectly logical to me, like that was normal. And, you know, 10 years earlier, it's not. And 30 years later,
10 years earlier, the same Trans Am was about 5.
Yeah. And the interest rate was a lot lower, probably, too. Yeah. So, but that's my formative years. So whenever I look at interest rates or the price of a vehicle, I always go back to that time when I was 15 and couldn't wait to get a car, but my dad wasn't, you know, in our house. They were divorced. He was hiding from the child support collector. And all I wanted was a car, and there was no way I was going to get one. And I'd hang out with Steve. And you know, funny thing about Steve and I is when we wanted to go to the movies, we'd go to Tri-Cities, Washington, to the strawberry fields. And we'd pick like baskets of strawberries until we had $20. And then we'd go get something to eat and then go to the movies. That's how we went to the movies. That's at least how I went to the movies.
We used to be able to pick up bottles were 2 cents and quart bottles were 5.
Yeah.
So we could find 6 of them. A bottle of Coke was 12 cents. But, you know, when you ask the question, I mean, me doing what I do with retail people, if somebody becomes your client when they're 23 and they're putting, you know, $100, $2 away, $200 away a month or $300 in either a mutual fund, because the nice thing about a mutual fund, even though we don't really sell them, is you can put $200-$300 in. There's no, you don't have to go buy shares. You can just put whatever you want in there, right? But
yeah.
if you sent us $300 a month, we'd have to, you know, maybe let it go for 3 months to buy 1,000 hours worth of spiders or something, or whatever you want. But if you're 25 and doing that, which makes sense, I'm not gonna try and say you need to hedge that. It's what percentage of your income, and you've got a goal. Now maybe, you know, I don't know. I suppose if interest rates got to 7 or 8, we'd probably maybe advise taking a little bit out of them. But for that person, you're not going to try and time the market, you know, Carl. But if you're retired and you don't have any income and you got this pile of essentially equity that is what you're living off of, that's a whole different risk profile.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get a doctor, I've had doctors, we've had over a period of time come in. We had, you know, unfortunately, some of the laws have hurt us a little bit, or people's perceptions of the laws. When we first started, we probably had four or five doctor groups where we managed their pension plan, and we did fine. And all of a sudden, the attorney said, "Oh man, you don't want any part of that. Too much risk. You don't want to take that responsibility." So they'd make, you know, the all the assistants and everybody get their own 401ks and break the whole thing up, so everybody's all the risk on their own. And I don't think they did as well as we did. I mean, maybe the last couple of years, because all the times go up, but they want to know part of the traditional pension plan. But if you have a group of doctors that are in their 40s or early 40s and they're all making $300,000 a year and they're putting away, you know, $10,000 a piece or something into this thing, you're not going to go crazy hedging it. Why would you? You know, yeah. unless you saw we had some, you know, wait a minute, we're up 30% a year for 3 years, you know, we'll just go look a little toppy, you might try and do something at that point. But just generally, I mean, we're talking about people that are putting away, you know, whatever, 10% of what they're making, and they're 30 years away from having to live on it. Everybody's different. But over a period of time, when the market just goes up every day, a lot of the bigger firms have just told everybody, I don't care if you're a square peg, you're coming in this round hole. You know, and everybody's got the same. I see people that I'll meet from friends, literally, hell, they're 80 years old and they're 90% in equities. I'm going, ooh, what are you doing? I mean, it has nothing to do with my
mother-in-law. Yeah. Right before she retired, she was in equities, and I'm like, who advised you to do that? Because I at the time, it was right after the stock market had dropped like 20%. I go, Mom, you should not be in that position.
Well, maybe you should after it dropped, but that's certainly not before.
Yeah, after, but man.
Yeah, I mean, but that's.
And she goes, "What should I do?" And I go, "Whatever you do, don't sell."
Yeah,
don't sell. In a year, you'll be fine.
You set yourself up in those. Actually had a guy when Jen and I were on the score. This guy comes in. He sort of wanted to be a client, but he really didn't. He wanted to trade his own stuff. And I said, and he's got all these stocks. That, you know, the guy's portfolio wasn't that big, but he's got Apple. He's got all these stocks. I said, where do you get these? Well, I watch the guys on TV, and I buy what they buy. And I go, okay. And one of them was, he had bought it like 60, and it's trading 100. And I said, boy, you want to take a little off the table on that one, or you want to, you know, protect it a little bit? Why? It's going up. Well, because, you know, if you're up $40, don't you want to at least protect some of it? No. Well, when are you going to sell it? He said, well, I'm going to sell it like when I always do. When it goes down to 30 and it's hurting me. And I go, why don't we turn that bus around and buy it at 30 and sell it at 100? He goes, yeah, well, you know, that might not be a bad idea.
that Twitter account I was telling you about where they trade on Nancy Pelosi trades, they had a list of similar apps. I think they got several apps. And one of them is doing really well. She was like in third place in terms of total return.
Stupid question. Where do they get that info? Does she have to file a report?
Yeah, I think they're getting it from Congress.
Okay.
But the person who was in second place, it wasn't Jim Cramer. It was inverted Jim Cramer.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It doesn't surprise me.
I mean, come on. Jim's probably telling you it's a great stock because he'd already purchased it. And he wants to sell it, so he has to juice the stock price, right, a little bit.
Well, the thing that those dudes run into is if you're actually, well, I'm not saying Jim Cramer's not a trader. He clearly is, but everything has, it's not whether you like something or not. It's whether you like the thing versus the price.
Yeah.
I mean, you could walk in and I'd say, hell, I really like your tie. I'll give you, you know, $40 for it. And you say, well, I want 500. Well, it's not a $500 tie. I mean, I like it, but it's not, you know, I really like your 57 Oldsmobile. I'd love to have one of those before I croak, but I'm not giving you $1 million for it. You know, if you want 40,000, that's maybe within the range if it's in good shape, but not a million. I mean, you know, there's there's something you like. I mean, for years I went, I would never buy Procter & Gamble, even though I love the company. I really thought they were managed so well, because it is so difficult to manage. I mean, I don't know if you teach this in any classes, but to have a company that has so many different product lines that are pretty much independent, to apportion your management skills so that those people are not necessarily they're competing outside and not internally, to have 10 products, 20 products, and to manage them all in that manner is incredibly difficult. And to do that means your management is really good. But they always had a premium. I mean, if you looked at, say, everybody else's P.E. ratio was 10, theirs was always 14. So people were willing to pay up for that management. So even though I love the management, I thought the management was fairly priced. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the stock had a premium. I wasn't the only person that saw that these guys were well-run, obviously. Everybody else, they knew it was going to be a really good company. If Hal Snar opened up a auto mechanics facility, and I know Hal's one hell of a manager, and he's got the best guys working there, and every other auto mechanics facility the same size is worth $1 million, and Hal's is worth $1.5 million, okay, it should be worth $1.5 million. I love it, but I'm not going to pay $1.5 million because now it's fairly priced there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
it's the premium I see is already there, so it's fairly priced. I still love the place, right? And I love Hal.
Yeah, stocks are really fascinating because a buyer of a stock, at the moment they buy a stock, they're demanding a stock, but the very next moment they could be a supplier of that stock.
Oh, sure,
really fascinating market.
Well, I mean, you buy it because you think it's underpriced. You don't buy it because you like the place.
But you could be, at one minute you're the demander, at the next minute you're the supplier.
Right? Well, an awful lot of people don't, you know, it's funny, when I keep saying it, it's almost like I'm berating humanity, but I'm not. There's so much to learn within the industry. We had a seminar one day, and I was, you always try and tell a couple stories to get people involved, or at least I do. I don't know if it's kind of a Andy and Mayberry type of thing. So I said, okay, let's say you got these guys all, remember back when they had newsletters and stuff, and everybody gets their info from God knows where, but they had newsletters and all this stuff, and I say, okay, you got your newsletter, and everybody says, the guy you're paying this for says, GM's a buy, and you're going to come out and you're going to call up PTI or whoever the hell you're with, Merrill Lynch or someplace, notice how I put PTI in the same level as Merrill Lynch, and you're going to say, Dan, buy me 1,000 shares of General Motors. You've got everything figured out. You got three newsletter writers say it's a buy. You think it's a buy. You've looked at all this stuff. And by the way, you're buying it. And the guy goes, yeah. One guy I was talking to. I said, there's only kind of one problem with that. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, who'd you buy it from? He goes, well, what do you mean, who'd I buy it from? I said, well, who'd you buy it from? Well, I put it in. I bought it from the market. No, you didn't. What do you mean by the market? Well, I don't know. I just went to New York Stock Exchange and I bought it. Okay, but on the other side of this trade, there's a guy, a person. You don't trade with the New York Stock Exchange. You don't trade with DTC. You don't trade with the Fed. You trade with a person who sold you 1,000 shares of GM. What makes you think today that you're smarter than him? The guy looks at me like I have four heads. He goes, what do you mean? I did all this research. Some guy was happy to sell it to you. He said, you got any more you want to buy? The guy looks at me. I said, I trade a trading floor all day long. I mean, I make a market. I'm a quarter, 3/8. Somebody sells me at a quarter. I immediately assume he knows more about that trade than I do. I'm just making a market. So I'm immediately careful. If the next guy comes in and he's a quarter as well, immediately I'm an eighth, a quarter. It's all of a sudden people seem to know something and I don't. I never assumed that I was the smart person on the trade. And the guy looked at me. He had no idea what I was talking about.
I tell you, that's the way I think about pool. I play pool, and I'm always thinking about if I spin it this way or spin it that way, and I overcomplicate the thing. My brother Rob, meanwhile, is taking $80 off a guy in a hustle where he's been fluffing it off, right? But I'm always overthinking it, man. I'm thinking the same way you. If I buy something from somebody who sold it to me, I'm thinking, why is that guy selling it? And I overthink it, and I end up.
Well, but at least you have some sort of respect. Every single person you trade with is not an idiot.
Yeah,
I mean, you might be the idiot.
They could be, and you could be the idiot.
Yeah.
They could be an idiot, but they might be brilliant.
Right? What do you say we go to a quick break here? SP Futures down 44. NASDAQ Futures down 176. And I want to pick your brain on just what, if these tariffs hang for a while, when are people going to be able to actually make business decisions? Is there going to be here long term and we're going to build a factory? And I also want to know if the market were to slide down and we go into somewhat of a recession. I'm not predicting that, but the what if. What happens to the educational world? I mean, what happens to the overheads there? We talk a lot about the healthcare, but education's got some overhead on it, too. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. 4901 U.S. Tax Shield, 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamar, Ricky on the board. Ricky, you soon going to be New York bound.
That's right.
Ricky, I think you, these places, if you could still get up there, I would say you got to have a drink at the Windows of the World, but I think now it's a big deal to get up there, top of the World Trade Center.
I mean, I'll give it a shot anyway. You know?
You know what? I think Matt tried to get in last time you guys were out there, and I think you got like a $60 cover or something. It gets you like one drink or two drinks or whatever. I don't know. It's going to be – but what a view. Wow, all the way to the harbor and a whole bit. Anyway, SP Futures down 38, NASDAQ Futures down 142. It's almost the exact amount that we popped back on the close last night with the hope that the tariffs weren't going to go through. So – basically right where we were at 230 almost. Dow futures only down 140. A couple stocks in Dow are actually up. Amgen's up 292. We've got Johnson & Johnson up 71 cents. McDonald's up a buck. So the Dow isn't as bad as the rest of the market here. Over in Europe, these guys were up yesterday, but the DAX is not today. Down 628, that's 2.7%. Autos are down 4%. FTSE down 63, not as bad, only 0.7%. Kick around a little more, though, up down 143, 1.75. Over Asia, these guys have been up and down all over the place, too. The Nikkei has been up. Now it's down 454, 1.2%. Hang Seng down 64. Nowhere near as much as it was up yesterday. It's 0.3%. Shanghai is actually up 7, so a little bit there. Bonds down 4 basis points, 4.14. Bond 10-year has actually come down in the last couple of weeks fairly significantly. Bund down 3 basis points, 2.46. Japan up 1 basis point, 1.42. Oil. Again, down 85 cents, 67.52. Some rumors that Saudi's going to increase production. I don't know where that's coming from because I don't think these guys are making that much money at this price, but who knows? It may happen. Rent down $1.11, 70.51. Natural gas up 12 cents, 4.24. Gold up 32 bucks, 29.33, back into the mid-2900s after flying down to the mid-3800s a couple days ago. Silver up a dime, 32.41. Copper up down 2 cents, 4.58. Foreign exchange, dollar, the euro is over 105 now, so it's actually gotten a little stronger. The British pound is up to 127, so dollar's actually gotten weaker. One of the reasons why gold is up. And crypto is down 2,600, 83,064. So it's back down to where it was before Trump said they're going to make it a government's going to, whatever, make some kind of a crypto fund. A lot of stuff. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Chief, it's currently 7:39 a.m. here in Chicago, 45 degrees right now with a high of 50. Increasingly windy with periods of rain and a thunderstorm. There can be pounding on the streets and highways, so watch out for that. Tonight will be more of the same, rain and thunderstorms with a low of 45 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 52 degrees right now with a high of 66. Partly sunny, windy, and cooler. Tonight will be clear and cool with a low of 45 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's 32 minutes. Iman Innes from Lane Cook, 50 minutes, 47 minutes inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 35 minutes inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, lastly inbound Stevenson from 294 to Dan Ryan, 41 minutes. MLB spring training yesterday, Diamondbacks beat Cubs 10-2 and Athletics beat White Sox 5-4. Today we got Padres playing against Cubs at 2:05 p.m. NBA today we got the Cavaliers at Bulls 7 p.m. and the Clippers at Suns at 9 p.m. Lastly, Blackhawks beat Kings 5-1 yesterday. Back over to you guys.
Hal, I'm going to try and we'll try this week for sure with all the guests, especially with Kevin, because he's, you know, teaching guys as we speak, you know, how to do long-term planning and stuff. I don't, you know, at Pullman, if you decided you were going to get some huge contract for railroad cars or buses or whatever the hell you were doing, you're talking about a 2 or 3 year plan of some kind of certainty where you had to raise the money, be able to tell some people what your plan is. There's a time horizon to it. There's a price to it. There's some way, this is what I'm going to build cars for X, and I'm going to sell them to these guys. I'm going to make this, and I can pay you guys back. There's a progression to all of this, and a lot of government policy, which I think you are at the forefront of telling us. Sometimes it makes things worse because you can't plan. And I went through the NBA stuff last week, and again I keep bringing that up because there were numbers everybody kind of familiar with. We're talking about places that people say are worth $5, $6, $7 billion, and they're making, $200, $300, $400 million. Some are breaking even. One was losing money. So you have to have one interesting view of the future. You know, it's a club. I get all that part. For you to pay $5 billion for something that's making $100 million, because the first year, even if your interest rate's 5%, you're $150 million in a hole, right? Just on interest. So what is, but we have an administration, or anybody, any administration makes plans, I would think, trying to get people to be good for business, build stuff, get jobs, all those kinds of things, build services, export stuff, you know, think up stuff that people around the world want. When you're going back and forth like this so rapidly, What does that do to the planners? And then what if the market drops another 20% and the wealth bubble decreases and our unemployment rate goes up a little bit? What does that do to higher education? What does that do to high-end restaurants? Where's the problem for all this stuff, which is kind of, you know, it's a big question, bud.
Well, first of all, I think we've talked about this a lot. The bottom half of the United States has probably been in recession for at least 10 years. Whereas the people at the top, they really haven't had it any better. I mean, things are really good for them. So a recession for us in the bottom, you know, 60-70% is just a continuation of what's been going on. Whereas the people in the top 20-30% are probably going to really feel it. So, I mean, let's just put that out there first. And I've been thinking about, I've had to rethink. I'm not saying I agree with it or not, but I heard this guy, an investor named Luke Roman, talking about how our trade deficit is really us exporting dollars to the world. And when we run that trade deficit with China, I've been trying to figure out why Trump, you know, because Trump benefits probably from a trade deficit because he sells real estate. And what do people do with those dollars in China that they get from their trade surplus with the United States? Well, they probably buy hard assets. So it probably benefits Trump to have these huge trade deficits, I would think, because now these foreigners have dollars and they want to buy stuff with it, right? They're not going to stuff in their mattress. So I've been trying to figure out why.
Hal, could you, before we burrow into that, sort of the same thing.
Yeah.
You explain to everybody the difference between the trade deficit and the current account deficit. Because if we're on a floating exchange rate, the trade deficit is just one piece of it, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we could have really no deficit. Even we could have a huge trade deficit with somebody, but no deficit, right?
Well, that's because all this money's coming back. I mean,
right.
if China has all these extra dollars from a trade surplus that maintains with the United States, it's got dollars. What is it going to do with those dollars? they might buy some things in Africa. What are those people in Africa that now have dollars going to do? Well, they might buy something from Australia, right? And what are those Australians going to do with those dollars? Well, they might end up buying something from the United States. They might buy treasuries. They might buy stock. So that money's going to come back to the United States. It doesn't get hidden in some foreign dictator's mattress. It comes back to the United States.
But even if there are only two countries, and that you're making it complex because you want your guys to get Fs and not As. If there's only two countries, and somebody builds three Chevy plants down in Mexico, and the Chevys come up here, we're going to have a huge trade deficit. But if the profit from the Chevys filters back here because we own the damn plant, there's no real deficit, right? I mean, in terms of the dollar versus the peso, it evens out. Hence, which it should do if you have a floating exchange rate, correct?
Yeah, I think it just depends on who's benefiting from that, right?
Right.
And I think over the last 20, 30 years, I think maybe since Nixon 86, the transfer of gold. Gold in international transactions. Ever since he issued that executive order, and we went to the deal with that creates this reserve currency status for the United States.
Well, you know who did that? Your buddy, who caused all that. Was it Nixon? That was before Nixon. Maybe it might have been Nixon. Your buddy caused all that. Your buddy Chucky de Gaulle. He was. You know the story better than me, but I'll start it out. The U.S. had the dollar was pegged to $35 an ounce of gold, correct?
Yeah,
and it was interchangeable. The silver certificates, those are redeemable in silver, correct? Because I still have a couple of those out of $1 silver certificates, but they went up to like $5 or $10. But the rest of the stuff was allegedly in gold. Then they became Federal Reserve notes, which you're talking. But anyway, Charles de Gaulle used to show up. With essentially a ship, I don't even need a whole ship, but with all these dollars, and he goes, "Here, I got, you know, $38 billion worth of dollars. Give me 3 million ounces of gold." our guys are like, "What the hell?" So
it was a price, right?
Yeah, and he actually said, "Here's your currency. Give me the gold."
Yeah,
and the gold
was flying out of the vault.
Well, we also it printed so many dollars we didn't have enough gold at 35. And more was like probably 100, right, or something.
Well, FDR did the same thing with domestic gold, right?
Yeah,
you could turn those dollars into gold, and he said, "No, we're not going to do that." So, if you think about a lot of that gold that we had in the vaults from FDR's time up and through Nixon's time, a lot of that gold was essentially stolen from the American public. Because they couldn't no longer convert their dollars into gold.
Well, we have to have some time here because Kevin wanted your opinion on this Taiwan semiconductor deal. But we got a few minutes for those. Well, you lead me onto these things. If you read about the Great Depression, most people will say that it really was two depressions that we came out of it in 36, 37, and went right back into it, which isn't exactly true. I think you probably know this, but two weird things happened in 1936 and partially into 37. One of which was the all the people came to Washington, had the big homeless place, and I don't want to go through the whole thing, but somehow or another in those days, hell, you didn't get paid when you were in the Army. You got paid kind of if you survived. So people were still owed their World War One checks, right?
Yeah.
It was like a pension or something like that. And Roosevelt refused, Hoover before him, refused to give those people the money. They said, "Look, you owe us dough. We can't eat. Give us whatever you owe us, our pension. Cash us out now." And they refused to do it. And that was the reason for that massive group that lived across from the White House that, who's the guy? I'll be back. What was his name? Montgomery? Not Montgomery. He was the general, him and Eisenhower was his flunky at the time. They burned all those people out.
Yeah.
And after that, you know what I'm talking about. Who's the general was in the Philippines? I shall return. MacArthur. MacArthur cleaned everything out of those people out, burned them out. But years later, when Roosevelt was in office, Congress passed a bill to give these people their money. And Roosevelt vetoed it for some reason. Out of all the stuff I've read about Roosevelt, I don't know why the hell he did that. But anyway, Congress overrode it. So in 1936, the government sent out all these checks to all these people, sort of like COVID relief. So everybody got a check in the mail. And that money had been spent like instantly, hell, because people hadn't any money for how long. So that what do you suppose the velocity of that money was? Infinite or what? And in the same year, what you just alluded to, the government decided it was illegal to hoard gold. So you had to sell your gold to the government. So people were digging crap out of, you know, grandma's wedding ring, and they were selling it to the government. The government essentially put all this cash in circulation. So both those things happened within like 12 months of each other. Yeah. So you had this big...
Well, on top of that, there was price controls. And I've read articles about how people are lined up at soup kitchens in New York City, yet the federal government's burning food in the fields of, say, Alabama.
Yeah.
Because they had all this extra food that they wanted to prop up the prices of agriculture products. So people are standing in soup kitchens at the same time the federal government is destroying crops throughout the United States, which kind of reminds me of what's going on with chickens today.
Well, you mentioned earlier, though, regarding the agricultural part, and I'm going to say, you give me a number here, I'm going to say we were 55, 54% agriculture in the 20s, right?
Yeah, so
and
probably something around
they there. Were, I'd say that most of that, because of the prices, were in a depression, not a recession. Would you agree?
In terms of what?
Prices? That whole group of people, like you mentioned earlier, the big chunk of society in the 20s was actually in a recession, because you mentioned in the last...
I think I lost.
Now, no, you I made the spin from one to the other. You said that in the last 10 years here, you think 80% of people have been in recession. Same thing in the 20s, basically, only worse.
Yeah, sorry, I lost you for a second there, sorry.
Okay, hey, what about the Taiwan semiconductor deal? Now, bunch of people are writing in about how they're not guaranteeing it. But what you know my feelings on these big government sponsored deals. I mean, when something's that big, yeah, probably you and I and Kevin aren't going to go do it ourselves. But to a certain extent, how much money do you give them to? Does it stop somebody else who wants to put up a semiconductor plant? All that's kind of in the stew here. But by and large, they're supposed to bring this $100 billion stuff, and we're going to, you know, certainly not. I would never be in a position where I'd want to put up red flags against it. I probably would want to give so much that I stopped anybody else from doing it and made them a monopoly. But what does something like that say to you? What are the chances of that happening flawlessly? I mean, if they're talking about three or four places, I think they already have sort of one in Phoenix or someplace. It's going to be bigger than a couple others. What do you think about stuff like that? I mean, I think if it works, it's fine, I guess. I don't really have that much of an opinion, except I don't want to give too much.
Well, it's going to have a delayed effect. If it happens, it's going to have a delayed effect. So, I mean, I think what happens is if Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing starts putting money into a factory, Apple starts putting money into a factory, then there's a SoftBank, there's Oracle, and then there's the UAE-based company that pledged a bunch of money, and Saudi Arabia. If they start building a factory, that tends to increase agri demand because companies are buying bricks and mortar and iron to build a factory. Now, once the factory is built, at the moment the factory is built and is staffed with production line workers, at that moment, then agri supply increases. So you're going to see this agri demand effect first, if it all happens, which would generally push prices up. And then once those factories are up and running, then the longer an aggregate supply curve shifts to the right, which has a tendency to pull prices down. So that, I'm not sure it's going to happen, but I think a lot of it is a result of this administration pushing, and people have known this for a year, that Trump's going to push these reciprocal tariffs, right? He wants to bring manufacturing back to the United States. So maybe this is encouraging, you know, building the factory in the United States. And, you know, I've thought about this a lot. If Luke Gorman is correct and running a trade deficit with China is basically exporting dollars, and those dollars are used to buy stocks and treasuries, who really benefits from that kind of economy? Wall Street, and people who live in the D.C. area. Who doesn't benefit from that, really? The people, because what's China doing? China's buying hard assets, right? They're using their cash to buy hard assets. They're buying gold. Maybe they're buying gold mines in Africa. They're buying cobalt mines in Africa, right? So China's investing in these hard assets. What are we doing? We have really awesome banks. And who benefits from the awesome banks? Well, I don't think I do all that much. I don't think my brothers do all that much.
Yeah, what is the...
But maybe Luke Gorman's got a point here, right?
What is the basis of... I don't know how this all would shake out. Boy, I don't want to ever really want to see it, but let's say, for instance, China owns all these hard asses. They own 50 gold mines in God knows where, South Africa or someplace. Yeah. But a whole lot of people we may at least have heard of have invested in China and aren't getting paid their dividends or aren't getting paid their interest and are just going, I mean, all those people, those real estate people, we got to have people here. Matter of fact, I read, and I don't think it's not life-threatening for them or anything, that CalPERS was a big investor in China. Now, whether it's 2% of their stuff or whatever it is, it's still a lot of money, but if it's 2-3% of their stuff, they're not going to go under, obviously. But somebody invested over there a real lot for a decade or more, because if you weren't over there, you were a chump, right? So yeah. There's all kinds of people here, and try and find anybody, even at Dan Janitas and people like that on the show that are Russell and know a lot about this stuff, can't seem to put their finger on who's not getting paid and where. I mean, is it all, the big, huge hedge funds here? Or is it? I mean, they're not paying a lot of people. Who the hell are a lot of people? What's the connection between if you and I and, there's BlackRock and then there's, Hal and Chief. We got $90 bazillion and China owes us everything per month. And, oh, by the way, we got free office towers over there that we lend them money for. Where's the connection between, hey, bleeps, give me a piece of that gold mine? Or they just tell me, you guys are out, we keep the gold mine. I mean, is there any connection between the sovereign wealth over there and the stuff that people have invested over there and aren't getting paid for or might not get paid for? I'm thinking the answer is no, but...
I would think no. I think the people who are getting really wealthy in China are the advocates of the people, because, communism is... you have your revolutions, right? You have your revolution to... knock over the capitalist, and then you go into the second phase of communism, where it's the dictatorship of the proletarian, right? The proletariat is the dictatorship, and then that's a harsh communism, and that's supposed to lead to this utopian communism that never comes, because the revolutionaries who replace the previous dictator with themselves, well, they're no longer men of the people. They're no longer workers. They're the state, and they don't want to give up power. And so I think the people who are getting rich in communist China are the oligarchs, the people in the Communist Party, who the rhetoric sounds great, workers of the world unite, but they're no different than the oligarchs in the United States, right? Who use government policy, rules, regulations, licensing, tariffs, subsidies, quotas, bans, competitors' vetoes, to create these cartels that government, creates and then protects. And then we wonder why prices of things are so expensive.
Yeah, except the people who work at Commonwealth Edison, much as they malign them by the day, are doing a little bit better than the Uyghurs working for nothing in these factories.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
I mean, it's a matter of degree to a certain extent.
Well, the Uyghurs, aren't they slave laborers, right?
Yeah, the regular people aren't that much better. Yeah. Some of those places,
the cotton pickers in China, they're slaves.
Well, it's not a great world we're in, and to a certain extent, that's what we're doing. We're off.
Well,
offshoring.
I think it's the equilibrium that we find in politics. I think politics is the dirtiest word of all, and I think what we're finding
is people taking advantage of people.
This is mercantilism, right? This is neo-mercantilism, where government's job is to create monopolies through these industrial cartels. And we have a lot of cartels out there.
It's those people think that that's government's job. You and I don't necessarily think that is. Hey, I got a question for you. This is a simple one, and I don't want to. I'm trying to steer away from politics as much as I can, which of course you can't do. But
well, it makes the word politics makes me sick.
Kevin says that a lot of the stuff going on with Taiwan, there isn't a whole lot of government largesse in there. Well, if that's good, but that'd be great. I mean, the guys in Wisconsin sure seem to have gotten a lot, and then they didn't build a damn place. This is just a simple economics question regarding, you know, Saudi Arabia is going to, Kenny was saying that they're going to now increase production, and it's going to lower the price of oil, and oh, by the way, it's going to cut inflation down. I didn't want to engage and say inflation is a monetary phenomenon, but so I didn't. But it's my question is, does our president really think that if the drill baby drill, if you lower the price of oil, that you're going to drill for more instead of less? I really hope he has a better view of economics than that. If the Saudis come out and
I think it's populism. I think it's populism because the Saudis need crude oil prices to be a lot higher than they are now.
Right.
Because it has all these programs, a safety net for its people. And if oil prices get too low for them, then their people start rumbling because they don't have the money to give them. In the United States, we need the oil price to go no longer lower than 70.
Well, right here, it seems like, I mean, I guess the question is, we got a dash here, but it's obvious, I think, to you and me, and I think a lot of people that have listened to the show for a while, that the reason why we're producing 13.6 million barrels a day is because the price is 70, which seems like it's comfortable for the drillers, it's comfortable for the refiners, gouging, not just comfortable. And by the way, it's somewhat comfortable for users. It's $3 a gallon. It's not $4 like it was. If you decide by, I'll say hook or crook, the Saudis dump some on the market, the first thing that's going to happen is the 13.6 per day is going to drop. It's going to go down, right?
Yeah.
So if you can't, you're not going to ask people to drill more and more to drive the price down to 60, because you and I know basic economics, that's not the way it works.
Yeah.
If you want it to go from more to 13.6, the price has got to go over 70, not under, right?
Well, the big drillers, they have these old wells that they need the price to be 70. So I don't think they're going to drill more. I think the only way you can bring down the price, and if we want to end the war in Ukraine, is we... You know, this is for all the people out there with the blue and yellow flags. We adopt a $1 tax called the Defeat Russia tax and place it on gasoline, and we keep increasing that tax until maybe crude oil prices are below the break-even barrel rate for Russia. And I think that's the only way you can get Russia to...
Yeah, but you decimate our industry.
I know, exactly. So all those... This is... I'm playing devil's advocate here. All those people on Twitter,
we got a dash, but what you're telling us very eloquently is how difficult this all is.
Oh, it's horrible. It's really difficult. Yeah, exactly. Because Saudi Arabia needs 90. We need 70. I don't think it's going to go below 70.
Well, they need 90 to pay all the family members what they think they should get paid. I don't care about that, do you?
Well, they need 90 to support their welfare programs or safety net.
Hey, if one of those schlumps has to drop down from a 767 to a Piper Cub, I don't care, really, do you? I mean, if they don't have enough money to go to Epstein's Island like they were doing, I don't have to worry about that, do you?
I don't know if we're going to ever find out what happened on Epstein's Island.
Did you listen last week to the show when I was talking to Carl about all the cell phones they were able to trace there?
They know who these people are.
They know who everybody is.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to find out. I think it was a big CIA op that is used to blackmail people, honestly.
Well, the interest...
If I was writing a novel, that would be my thesis.
Well, the interesting... that's what Wayne was talking about, how the guy got... Nobody could figure out where Epstein first got the money. He must have got it from the government, but... But yeah. The weird part in there is
that's where you got a seed money, right?
You can't trace anybody in Europe because they won't let people. Why do we let people have access to people's locations here and they don't there?
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway. Well, maybe Europe maybe has a longer history of this, and they know how to keep all that stuff hidden.
Well, they've got a history of the the Gestapo and the Stasi that came after him. Germans are very, they don't want anybody collecting stuff on them because they went through that. Yeah. Anyway, take care of yourself, bud. Are you you're teaching every day or you online? What are you doing?
Yeah, I just did a big, huge, midterm reports Sunday night at midnight. I got my last report in about 5 minutes before it was due.
that never changes. I sure wish I could be in the back row in your class raising my hand asking questions. Who is that guy back there? Talk to you next week. But Ricky, nice job. SP Futures down 30. Coming back here. And as if he was only not down 94. We were much worse than that a half hour ago. Back tomorrow. Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.